"For the last time," Tinituvial hissed in his ear as they climbed the narrow pass between the twin peaks of Gluvian. "You can't do this. It'll never work. It'll go disastrously wrong. I'm warning you, it'll all end in tears. And don't you dare say I didn't warn you." Below them, the mountainside fell away steeply to the plain below. In the middle of it, black as night, and impossibly tall and thin, stood the Tower of Snorfang. The very sight of it made the mind rebel. How could anything so tall and narrow stay upright? The slightest puff of wind ought to blow it over, in accordance with the basic laws of leverage. And what could it possibly be made of? Nobody knew. But it was deathly cold to the touch. Rest your hand on it, and all the skin would be stripped off your palm. And who would build a tower with no windows and no door? All that was known for sure was that it was very, very old. There were those among the wise who believed that it was older than the realms themselves, that it had been there before above was separated from below, a perpendicular line drawn at random in the void with a ruler, and that the molten lava had lapped and eddied around its base, cooled by its icy touch to form the earth. Some said that it wasn't even a part of the realms. Inside, it was another somewhere entirely, and that its square-sided tube held more space and time than everything that was outside it. For Mordak, it had always been there, a baffling, uncomfortable anomaly. Neither good nor evil, friend nor foe, completely familiar, yet utterly strange. It was impossible to imagine the landscape without it, but it was absolutely and definitively out of place, an intrusion, something you caught sight of out of the corner of your eye, but took pains never to look at directly. Like the horrible yellow face. Except that the face was painfully bright and crushingly hot, whereas the tower was bitter cold, and light seemed to fall into it and not come out again. The sight of it drained him, as though something had stuck a tube down his throat and started to suck. It had always been empty, of course. Nobody and nothing could live there. He'd always thought of it as a stone variety of pitcher plant. Anything that went in there would be slowly digested, nourishing the stones until it was entirely consumed. He forced himself to look at it. A movement on the upper battlements caught his eye, and he frowned. "What flags are those?" The elf had much better eyesight. "Not flags," she said. "Washing." Perfectly true. As they got closer, Mordak could see for himself. Someone had slung a washing line between the two arched black horns that projected from the topmost rampart, and had hung out sheets, pillowcases, and a dozen pairs of socks. "You're right," he said. "There is someone living there." "I told you, didn't I?" Mordak bit his lip. "Yes, you did. I just couldn't believe it, that's all. I mean, who on earth could possibly survive 5 minutes inside that thing?" She shrugged. "Humans?" Mordak sighed. Ever since he'd been elected Dark Lord and sat on the Iron Throne, he tried to understand the four races. Really understand, figure out how their minds worked, instead of merely what they tasted like. Elves hadn't been all that difficult. When you're a bit better than most people at most things, it's not just easy, but practically inevitable, to get to thinking you're better than everybody at everything. And after a while, you simplify that a little, and you just know that you're the best. Dwarves had taken a little bit more figuring out. Proud, mean, clever, stupid, indomitable, pig-headed, brave, greedy, loyal, treacherous, basically just plain folks. Goblins. Other races had enormous trouble getting under the skins of goblins, though generations of weaponsmiths had tried to make it simpler for them. But surely they were the most straightforward of the lot. Work hard, play hard. And fun is a dish best eaten raw. Just a bunch of overgrown kids, really. Humans, though. He despaired of ever understanding them. Until finally, he'd made the connection. Struck the spark that illuminated everything. Humans, alone of the races, have a unique ability to believe things that are patently untrue, even when the facts are pulling their heads back by the hair and yelling in their faces. They see what they want to see, believe what they want to believe, lie to themselves all the time, and ignore anything that doesn't suit them. This makes them impossibly strong and incredibly dangerous. A human can walk on water, believing there's a bridge where there isn't one. A human can walk through a wall just by disapproving of it. A human can live in the Tower of Snorfang, simply by pretending it's an ordinary house. In the end, it came down to simple optics. A goblin can see in the dark. An elf can see a single snowflake half a mile away. A dwarf can gauge a thousandth of an inch by eye and distinguish between 10,000 minute variations of ore-bearing quartz by tiny differences in colour. But the human can turn a blind eye to anything at all. Mordak was now standing as close as he'd ever been in his life to the foot of the tower. The urge to turn and run was almost unbearably strong. If it wasn't for the elf, he knew, he wouldn't be able to take one more step. He also knew that the elf had it in her to speak the seven words of power, and there was no death so horrible that he wouldn't embrace it joyfully, rather than hear them. I told you, but you wouldn't listen. That, of course, was why he'd brought her. Go on, then. She glared at him. I'm not knocking. This is all your idea, you do it. I'm ordering you to knock on that wall. In that case, I quit. Two more words of power he'd forgotten about. He sighed. Don't be such a fusspot, he said. Then he reversed the spear he carried in his right hand and slammed the butt against the wall. Twice he pounded it against the unyielding stone, and then it snapped like a carrot. He shivered. That's cold, he said. Shh, look. Incredibly thin parallel lines of glowing red fire shot up from the ground, then made right angles to meet at the top. Noiselessly, a door swung open. A bald, middle-aged human stuck his head out at them and said, Yes, what is it? Tinnituvial opened her mouth, then closed it again. Mordak stabbed her viciously in the small of the back with his elbow. She stumbled forward half a pace, but still couldn't speak. Hold on, the man said. I know you, don't I? Tinny Tuviel nodded. Mostly because, behind her back, Mordack had a pawful of her hair. You're from the council. The man sighed. If it's about the damn barbecue license, we decided not to bother. Mordack was proud of what Tinny Tuviel did then. He knew she was scared, petrified more like, and with such good reason. These humans controlled the Tower of Snorfang and the Stone of Snordor and the appalling Vicar's Weapon. And their coming heralded the triumph of the Nameless One. But in spite of all that, she was an elf to her core. And as soon as the human used that snotty tone to her, everything else, all her doubts and fears, were forgotten. She looked at him with those pale grey eyes down that ineffably long nose, and sure enough, he wilted. "It's not about that," she said. And her voice would have split diamonds. "Are you the occupier of these premises?" A wary look came into the man's eyes, as if he was sizing up the chances of saying no and getting away with it. "What about it?" Tinny Tuviel narrowed the focus of her stare. Was it Mordack's imagination, or were tiny plumes of smoke rising from the man's face? "We have reason to believe that you are operating an unauthorized telemetric device from this address. You are not obliged to say anything," she added, before he could speak. "But a refusal to answer questions will be construed as an admission of guilt." "A what device?" She cleared her throat. "A telemetric device is any manufactured object designed to transmit or receive, or capable of transmitting or receiving any message, signal, data, or other communication, whether audible, visible, or telepathic, including, but not confined to, speech, writing, numbers, images, prophetic visions, divine commands, and overwhelming urges to drive the infidel into the sea." "Well?" He gazed at her for a long time. Then he said, "Oh, you mean the desktop?" She couldn't possibly know what he was talking about, but she gave no outward sign of it. "Are you in possession of one?" "Well, Molly's got one. That's my wife. We use it for ordering stuff online. You saw it the last time you were here." Tinny Tuviel breathed out slowly through her nose. "Please step aside," she said. He moved a little, then stopped. "Hold on," he said. "Who's that?" "That?" For a moment, Tinny Tuviel looked genuinely nonplussed. "Oh, him. He's my assistant. He runs little errands for me, fetches, carries, that sort of thing." "What is it?" "A goblin." "Well, she'd earned it." "Loyal little fellow. It's amazing what they can be trained to do if you're very, very patient." The human peered round Tinny Tuviel's shoulder at him. "Is it safe?" "That depends." "Ah. Let's get back to the matter in hand, shall we?" she said crisply. And once again Mordack was filled with admiration. He'd expected at least 10 minutes of the capable of performing simple tasks stuff, but here she was, denying herself the chance of a lifetime. "You admit that you've been operating a prohibited device without the proper authorization." The human scowled at her. "I didn't know it's not allowed," he said. "Nobody told me." "That's no defense in law," she said. "Now, this is a form 377/68/2, and this is a B-47A, And this is a 23796P. And this is a 23796P1. I shall need 3 copies of each of them on my desk this time tomorrow, together with any written submissions you may choose to make in mitigation, bearing in mind that you are not entitled to rely on any evidence unless it's been submitted in writing at least 28 days before the hearing, duly notarized. She thrust the wedge of paper under his nose. He had a choice. Take them or suffocate. Any questions?
I can't read any of this. It's just squiggles.
That, she said icily, is old High Elvish. Naturally, your replies must be in Elvish too. If you choose to use a translator, he or she must file an affidavit of accuracy, in triplicate, duly notarized. Should you wish to be represented by counsel at the tribunal, you'll need to...
Hang on. What tribunal?
She looked at him as if she couldn't believe what she'd just heard.
The tribunal, of course,
at which your fate will be decided by means of either a court case, or deal by fire, or trial by combat. Should you wish to appoint a champion to fight for you, you'll need to file a certificate of cowardice with the registrar within 48 hours, accompanied by...
Trial by combat?
She nodded. I take it you're not au fait with Elvish litigation.
No, I bloody well am not.
She nodded. Trust me, she said. Trial by combat is cheaper, quicker, fairer, and considerably less traumatic. Or you could always opt for the ordeal by fire, which I'm told is considerably less painful than it looks, though how anybody could possibly know. The human had gone a very odd colour. Curious. A thought crossed Mordack's mind, and he filed it away for further consideration.
This is stupid, the human protested. Nobody told us. We didn't know.
She gave him her salt-on-a-slug look. Presumably you came across the relevant regulations when you thoroughly acquainted yourself with our legal code before you came here. She paused. Then added, You did do that, didn't you?
Read all your laws? No, of course not. We thought...
She cleared her throat again.
Failure to read, mark, and inwardly digest the legal code before taking up residence in the realms is itself an offence.
But of course you knew that, obviously.
No! How could I possibly?
It's all there, she said firmly, in the legal code, which you are assumed to have read. She waited just long enough for hope to ebb away in his heart, then went on, However, my department doesn't deal with failure to read, so it's not for me to bring charges. Now then, you'll be notified at least 20 minutes in advance of the time and place of the tribunal, at which point you'll have an opportunity to choose your weapons for the actual hearing. Sword, axe, mace, flail. The human backed away until he came up against a wall. He stopped and slid down it until he was sitting on the floor. Assuming, she went on, that you intend to plead not guilty.
Well, I think that's everything for now. Have a nice day.
She turned to leave, snapping her fingers at Mordack without looking at him. A nice touch, he had to admit, though the human didn't actually see it because he had his head in his hands. Then he looked up.
Just a minute, he said.
Well,
assuming I plead not guilty.
That's right.
How about if I confess? Say I did it. In that case, you'd be liable to a fine of 1 shilling and 3d, she said crisply, payable in weekly instalments spread over 5 years. I confess, I did it, I'm guilty. Together, she went on, with confiscation of the unauthorized device. All right. He pulled a tragic face. Except we need it. We get all our food and stuff online. We'll starve. Confiscation pending the granting of the appropriate permit, she said smoothly, which costs 1d 3d and usually takes 48 hours to process. Right, and then what? You can have your device back. There was a long silence, during which the human blinked 47 times. Just to recap, he said eventually, in a rather small, dry voice, you take it away. I give you 1d 3d. 2 days later, I get it back. Yes. She gave him a thin smile, inside which perishable food would probably stay good indefinitely. We're not unreasonable, you know. We just uphold the law. The human was fumbling in his trouser pocket. He dredged up 2 silver pennies. Here you go, he said, waving them at her. For the what's-it fee. I'm sorry, I can't accept it. Why the hell not? I don't have change. The human whimpered, turned out his pockets onto the floor, scrabbled wildly and found 1d 1/2 and 1d. She took the coins, counted them, and wrote him a receipt. Now then, she said, that just leaves the device. She gave him a receipt for that, too. Then Mordack loaded the strange glass thing, like an empty picture frame, but with thick black string hanging out of it, into the troll-skin bag he happened to have with him. 10 minutes later, they were outside and walking very fast towards the mountains. Piece of cake, Tinnituvial was saying. Did you see me back there? I was so good. I had him eating out of the palm of my... Yes, quite, Mordack said. Just one thing. The look on his face. When I started on about trial by combat, I thought he was going to have a little accident. Honestly, humans are so pathetic. Indeed, Mordack said. Don't you think that was odd? Mind you, what can you expect from... In what way, odd? Mordack skipped 2 paces to catch up with her. Well, he panted, think about it. We daren't just slaughter the lot of them because of the vicar's weapon, right? Well, yes, hence all that nonsense. Worked, though, didn't it? Of course, I never doubted for 1 moment. They're safe from an entire army, Mordack said. But you and all your bureau babble scare him witless. What's wrong with this picture? Oh, don't be so... She stopped dead, and he nearly cannoned into her. Explain. All right. Mordack put down the sack and sat on a rock. Here's what should have happened. You made your threats. He laughed in your face. Piss off, spiky lugs. He should have said, or we'll drill you full of small holes. He frowned. That's what should have happened. But it didn't. Her lips parted, then came together again. What I think is, Mordack went on, they're protected by that old fool and his ghastly machine, but they don't know it. Like I said, odd. She thought about that for a moment, then shrugged. All right, she said. So what? Doesn't matter. We've got the Stone of Snawdor, which means adios prophecies. Get lost, nameless one. You lose and we win. Result. But Mordack only shook his head. Then he pulled the glass thing out of the bag and peered at it closely for a bit.
Have we, though?
Have we what?
Got the Stone of Snawdor.
Come on, you know more about this than I do. What's it supposed to look like?
Well, you know, a stone, sort of stone-shaped. Heavy?
I have no idea.
I'd assume it would be heavy. I mean, it's one of the leading characteristics of stones. Hard, too, I bet.
Well?
Mordack picked the thing up easily in one hand, and with the other drew his claw across the back, ploughing a deep furrow.
And, of course, there's the inscription. Mustn't forget that.
The runes, carved all round the edge. Mordack went on, peering carefully. Which no one has ever been able to decipher, of course, but unmistakably runes. You'll know all about that from reading about it in the books.
She wasn't looking at him.
Well, of course.
Absolutely. Well, they're not here.
What?
He held the thing under her nose.
Rune free.
In fact, no carvings of any sort. And it's not heavy, and I can scratch the back with my nails. This isn't it.
But I haven't got a clue what this thing is, but it's not the Stone of Bloody Snawdor.
You jumped to conclusions. You got it wrong, admit it. All that bloody performance for nothing.
She went stiff as a board and cold as ice.
It was your idea.
My idea to bluff our way in there and pinch the stone, yes, based on the assumption that the stone was there in the first place. Which turns out not to be the case.
He sighed and put the thing back in the bag.
Or maybe it is, I don't know. All we do know is this isn't it. And if we haven't pinched the stone, we haven't derailed the prophecy.
Which means the nameless one.
Yes, what is it? She looked round. Standing over Mordack with a rather vacant smile on his lips was a human. He wore weird clothes and funny white shoes, and he didn't seem the least bit afraid of goblins.
Excuse me, he said. I wonder if you could help me. I seem to be lost.
They looked at him. He carried on smiling.
Just a minute, Mordack said.
He scrambled to his feet, grabbed Tinny Tuviel by the arm and dragged her out of the stranger's earshot.
Who the hell is that?
I don't know, do I?
He's strange.
Human.
Even for a human, he's strange.
Dress sense isn't everything.
She smiled at him. You should know that, of all people. Mordack pretended he hadn't heard.
A human encounters a goblin in the wilderness. What does he do?
Runs away.
Right. Is he running?
Not really.
Furthermore, a human encounters a goblin and an elf having a chat in the wilderness. Does he register surprise? Or does he see things like that every day?
The elf shrugged.
Maybe he's a bit funny in the head.
Anyway, he's harmless enough, surely.
She glanced at him, then squeezed Mordack's wrist and pointed.
Look.
The human had pulled the, not the stone, out of the bag, and was looking at it. There was curiosity on his face, sure enough, but not at the thing itself,
On the contrary.
Wait here, Mordack said.
Like hell I will.
They went back to where the human was kneeling. He sat the thing upright and was gazing at it.
Excuse me, Mordack said.
Yes?
This may sound like a silly question, but do you know what that is?
The man nodded happily.
I think I do, he said. I think it's a Kawaguchi all-in-one touchscreen desktop with a 500 gig hard drive and an 8 gig memory. A bit old-fashioned, but a good basic bit of kit.
You've seen one before?
I must have done. In fact, I may have had one at some stage, but I honestly can't be sure.
Mordack peered at him.
You aren't from around here, are you?
The man shrugged.
I'm not sure. I don't think I am, but I have no way of knowing.
Tinnituvial nudged Mordack in the ribs.
Funny in the head, she whispered.
Mordack scowled at her, then wiped the look off his face and replaced it with his nearest approximation to a friendly smile. The man seemed to take it in his stride.
That thing, he said. What does it do?
Oh, most things, the man said. Good, basic workhorse, nothing fancy.
Most things.
The man nodded.
Just a bit slower, that's all.
Of course, he added,
it does need to be plugged in first. It's a desktop, you see, not a laptop. Got to be connected to the mains.
He scratched his head.
You know, he said, I'm almost certain I had one of these. It does seem terribly familiar.
Mordack drew a deep breath and let it out slowly.
When you say it does most things,
pretty much everything you could want, really. Providing you're patient. I mean, it's no flying machine, just a solid, everyday all-rounder.
Mordack nodded. It can't fly, but it can do everything else.
Mm-hmm, the man nodded.
Anyway, I was wondering, could you possibly tell me the way to the Tower of Snorfang?
Behind you.
Excuse me? Mordack pointed. The man turned round, then said,
Ah, that tower. That's it, is it?
Yes. You don't seem very impressed.
The man shrugged. It's a tower block. I'm fairly sure I've seen lots of them.
Where you come from?
Wherever that is. Yes, I suppose so. Thanks ever so much.
He waved his hand in a friendly fashion, then turned and walked towards the tower.
Nutcase, Tinnituvial said.
Mordack didn't reply. He knelt down and put the thing back in its bag, taking care to buckle the flap down tight.
Don't tell me you believed any of that. He's a loon. Look at him.
The man was strolling down the path to the tower, apparently without a care in the world. Mordack stared at his back for a moment, then shrugged.
He says this thing will do everything except fly.
You know what this means?
She nodded. He's a nutcase, I just told you.
That's how they did it, Mordack said. The vicar's weapon. This must be how they conjured it up. And now we've got it.
Tinnituvial was looking doubtful. And anyway, she said, didn't I hear him say you had to do something to get it working?
Connect it to the mains, Mordack replied. But we can do that easily enough.
Mains water or mains drainage?
Mordack shrugged.
We'll try both, he said.
Come on, We'll have this thing up and running in no time, you'll see.